Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Influential She. This is our podcast about accelerating the influence of women. I'm your co-host, Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp, and it's great to be here today. One of the things that we are going to focus on today, and it always bleeds into other areas, but very specifically on our high leverage practice of as if. And I love our tagline on this because I think both you and I, Deb, have lived our lives this way. It's like proceeding until you're apprehended, because there's sometimes when if you don't get really brazen and go out there, you're just going to be just stuck forever. And I know that it's easy, and it's probably easier to sometimes just sit around, wait for somebody to give you permission because it's a little bit safer. But when you can bridge that and go out on your own to speak, to act, to grow, this is when it really helps to accelerate your influence.
Oh, absolutely, Mel. And we have the most wonderful guest who's just kind of lived her life as if. It's amazing because this is about being in that space of, okay, maybe I am root bound into this certain circumstance that I'm in by finances or relationship or, you know, space bound to whatever town that I'm in, whatever obligation, but it's taking on the persona of where you want to go. And it's not asking anybody else to let you do it. It's just moving into that space of what you want to be and what you want to become. And it's about not having everything all buttoned up and tied up in a bow and, you know, made so perfect, because many times it's difficult to move into your space of possibility without really acting as if, which takes just a fair amount of moxie and courage to do. And we just got this incredible woman. I'm just so excited to introduce her. Her name is Jen Gresham. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's just great to have you on the show. And we're going to start with kind of where you are right now, Jen, because it's just such an incredible job that you're doing and the kind of role that you're in. And I think our listeners would be so fascinated with you being the founder of Work for Humanity. Now, I mean, that's a big word, like humanity, like that's humanity and people wherever they are, it's the world. What is humanity? Tell us about what this is and where it came from.
Yeah. So we like to say that we are trying to create a more enjoyable and equitable future of work, so that workers, organizations, and communities can thrive together. And this came from a few things kind of pieced together. There was some coaching work that I was doing with individuals and small business owners. And in that work, I just saw there was so much potential in people that was untapped. And often they were constrained by finances. And I really wanted to take that to a much bigger level. I'm sure we'll get into, I have a background as a scientist. I love doing research. And what I found is that, you know, there's this narrative that the big thing holding people back is a lack of education, right? We need to send more people to college. But what I found is that there's actually a lack of good jobs. So we could give everybody a STEM education. We could make them, you know, all AI, computer scientists, PhDs, and not much would change. And so that really led me to, how do we transform our economy and our society at scale to get to that equity and enjoyment piece? So that's what we're all about.
So Jen, when I look at you and I hear about this work and I go to your website, it's like, it's just absolutely phenomenal. It's this big picture thinking. And for people who don't know you and don't know your story, they think that, wow, you know, this woman has really, you know, this is where she's at. It's been this, you know, really straight pathway to get there. But I think what's fascinating about you is you've had a pretty circuitous route to your current place today. In fact, I think that's what makes you so fascinating, is that, boy, you've taken lots of twists and turns. So can you help us back map that so we can put the pieces together?
Yes, circuitous is a really good way to describe it. When I went to college, so I went to the Air Force Academy, you know, when I was first trying to choose a major, I was trying to choose between chemistry and English. There's not a lot of people who are weighing those two majors equally. And, you know, I'd been a poet my whole life. I'd been writing my whole life. But during the summers in high school, I'd been involved in this program that allowed students to go work in a college lab. So I was working alongside graduate students doing biochemical research. And so, you know, I was like, well, I have a lot of experience in both of these. I love them both. But ultimately, I thought, you know, I need something that puts money on the table. So for a financial reason, I decided to pursue chemistry. And I worked in the Air Force as a scientist for active duty 16 years, and then another 4 years in the reserve. And I love and hate the fact that the Air Force is incredibly generous in what they think people are capable of doing. So despite the fact that I had a degree in biochemistry, my very first job was running a nuclear physics lab. So we were doing nuclear treaty monitoring.
Just a small job, right?
Seriously. I told the personnel officer, I'm like, you know, I have a degree in biochemistry, right? It's like, oh, chemistry, physics, it's all the same. And it was like that over and over, right? So I ran programs and like lubricants for spacecraft. I did corporate communications for the Air Force Research Lab. That was a really great one because I got to bring my English writing side and communication side together with the science. I had to teach myself everything, right? So, okay. Great. I do all of that. My last assignment was in human performance augmentation. Again, I had no background in that, but they brought me on as the assistant chief scientist for the human performance wing. So this was just, I mean, every time, right, the scope of what I was working with got bigger and bigger and bigger, and in some ways more exciting. And that really helped me see, like, wow, like I didn't even know human performance augmentation was a thing, you know, how cool is that? And sometimes people imagine when they hear that it's in the military, they're imagining like super soldiers or things like that. And that's not what we did. We were more looking at, you know, you've got an intelligence officer who's sitting at his computer looking at imagery 12 hours a day, most of which nothing is happening. How do we help that person spot the anomalies? And how do we help them know when their performance has declined and they shouldn't be looking at a screen anymore? It was things like that. So when I finally decided to leave the military, I actually went back to that English piece. I became a writer. I was writing about human performance augmentation for my old unit and kind of writing thought leadership pieces to help them get more funding. And as a part of that writing, I started a blog and I was just cataloging my whole transition. And people started to say, hey, can we hire you? And I said, hire me for what? You want me to write something for you? And they said, no, we want you to show us how to do what you've done. How do we do this major career shift? And I said, I don't know anything about that. And so when like the 10th person asked me, I said, okay, you know what? I'm a scientist. I'm used to doing experiments. I will design something with the caveat. I have no idea if it'll work. So if you're willing to play with me, I'll create it with you. And so that sold out in 24 hours. And I designed a course. It was really successful. And so I kind of fell into career coaching. And so I worked with people around the world for several years, helping them figure out what do I want to do? Right? If anything were possible, what do I want? Because I found that was the question that no one could help me answer. You know, when the military has this program, when you leave, it's called a transition assistance program. I thought that's what we were going to talk about. What they actually talked about was how to file for unemployment. It was really depressing.
I love it.
They just sort of assumed like you're not going to get a job. So I did that for many years. And again, that just kept growing and morphing. So, you know, it started with career changers and it was solopreneurs who weren't making enough money and wanted to kind of figure out how to go from this thing that I'm good at to actually thriving at this thing I'm good at. And then that morphed into helping people with moonshots. And again, this was not something I knew how to do. It was a concept I'd heard about. In fact, we've all heard about it, really, right? Because it comes from John F. Kennedy's Put a Man on the Moon speech. That's where that comes from. And then Google had their moonshot factory. But I heard about it through Peter Diamandis, who wrote a book called Bold. And although I did not follow any of the advice in his book, because, you know, he was really talking about, you know, how do you create a product that, you know, serves an exponential number of people and makes an exponential amount of money. I wasn't really interested in that. But I thought, oh, what if you could take on crazy impossible goals that, if achieved, would have a huge impact either out in the world or for yourself personally? And so I went to my coach and clients and I said, hey, I don't know how to do this thing, but I'm interested in it. Would you be willing to play with me? And they all said yes. And the results from that were so mind-blowing. I closed my coaching practice and decided to launch my own moonshot, as you do.
As you do, yeah. Jen. So let's just talk. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit from just all the as if steps you made, like proceed until apprehended. I mean, here you are in biochemistry and they say, we want you to nuclear physics. What the heck? It's just like, you know, not that big a leap. And I don't know anything about coaching. And now I'm going to do coaching. And I don't know much about moonshots. I've read a little bit, but now I'm going to do that and I'm going to quit this. And then I'm going to start working for humanity, like overall. So talk about your thinking on just moving forward. You know, what were some of the things that you could say, I have this skill set that I trust now, and I don't even have any idea if it applies and it works over here, but I'm going to translate that and launch from there and be honest. I've heard you be honest every step of the way as you're talking to people, to your coaching clients, to your bosses, to, you know, you're just at this level of vulnerability and honesty. And yet, confident in some of what you know. I mean, biochemist, poet. Tell us how that felt, or what are some of the things that you trusted?
Yeah, I do think I've always simply trusted myself to figure things out. I don't know exactly where that comes from, but it certainly has always been there. And I don't mean to say that it always worked out the way I thought it was going to work out. So I'll tell you a quick story. So, because this is as a kid, right? So I was in the fourth grade. I was going to the summer camp. And I noticed that boxing was a really big deal in the camp, right? So the whole camp would come and watch these boxing matches, but it was always boys. And so I went up to the camp director. He was this huge, burly, you know, kind of farmer rancher dude. He had literally had the straw hat with the wheat coming out. I mean, it was just such a caricature, right? And his name was JR. Of course it was.
Of course.
And I said, hey, I've noticed that we do these boxing matches and it's only boys. I think girls should be able to box. Bear in mind, I knew nothing about boxing. I'd spoken to no one about it. I just was sharing this observation. And so he said, you want to box? And I said, yeah, I want to box. And so he stood me up in front of the whole camp. And he raised my little arm in the air. And he's like, this little girl wants to box. And the whole camp goes crazy, right? And so he allowed me to choose my opponent. I knew nothing about it. So I just chose a nice girl, but she was several inches taller than me. So now, later I learned that's a bad choice. So height has its advantages in boxing. Who knew, right? So, I mean, I get a bloody nose. I go in there, my eyes are closed. I don't know what I'm doing. And I get a bloody nose and I'm like, wow, that sucked. And I really have no desire to box anymore. But it didn't matter, right? Like, that started a movement. And so girls boxed at that camp from there on out. They trained the girls how to box. I never got in the ring again. So it's, I think it's that trust, right? Like, I don't know exactly where this is going to go, but I think it's going to be juicy. And you just keep, I'm a learner at heart.
Well, and Jen, we talk a lot about, you know, living a juicy life. And that really comes from trusting the core of who you are and then taking a risk within that. Maybe not, you know, a risk that's so far out there that it just, you know, you have to consider sacrificing everything. But, you know, if this idea comes to your mind, take a risk to pursue it. Now, some of that, you opened up being a small girl. And I think you've underestimated in how you've talked to our listeners about, oh yeah, well, I joined the Air Force. Well, really, you applied to the academies of the military and, you know, trusted yourself enough in your grades and your moxie. And I mean, that's not, you know, that's just an achiever. But that achievement kind of came out of some clarity around some pain in your life, didn't it?
It did, yeah. So I grew up in an abusive household. My dad was, how do you say it? I mean, to say controlling really doesn't touch it. You know, I mean, he was a narcissist and had some mental health issues that I don't think we ever really, I don't know if he ever got him diagnosed or not. But yeah, and it was clear to me that the only way I could live an independent life for myself, where I got to make my own choices, was to have the financial freedom, right? Because my dad had already started to say things when I was in high school, like, you take this class or I'm not going to pay for college. And it was just all encompassing. Like, I wasn't allowed to make any choices for myself, even to the point where, so I was valedictorian of my high school. I wrote my speech. And in the middle of the night, my dad changed my speech on the computer and didn't tell me. So I get up there to read my speech and it's no longer my words. So that's when I say controlling, right? That's what I'm getting to. And so I knew that I had to have financial freedom. Like I couldn't give him that lever over me, or it would drive every decision of my life. So luckily, I mean, the good part here is that he was also cheap. And so he's actually the one who told me about the academies. Big mistake. And once I learned that you pay $500 and then you never pay another cent again, and you actually get paid while you're going through the academy, and then you have a guaranteed job on the other end, I was like, that's it. So I applied to the Air Force Academy, West Point, and Annapolis. Those three schools. That was it.
And what was the outcome of those three? Because we know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so I got into all three.
Exactly. That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's not just applying, Jen. You were accepted to all three.
So. Yeah. And, you know, it was risky, right? Because not only is it hard to get in, but like, you have to get an appointment by your state senator or congressperson. And they only have so many slots that they have to give. So in any given year, they may only be able to send one or two people from the entire state. If you're going for your senator or if you're a congressperson, right? I mean, the competition is really intense. And I will not lie, that was super stressful because I knew what was riding on the line. And because I didn't even apply anywhere else, you know, it was like, I don't think it occurred to my high school brain, like, but what if I don't get in? Like, I don't have a plan B.
So I think what's interesting too, you know, that was really sort of the decision piece that got you where you went. But I, you know, as I've listened to your story throughout, there was a lot of decisions you made that I'm sure that other people thought, are you serious? I mean, did you ever feel that pressure from the outside where here it is and you have this amazing job, or you're with, you know, you've been in the Air Force, wasn't it 16 years, and you decided to retire? And, you know, I mean, that couldn't have been met with a lot of, you go, girl, sort of thing. So what gave you that ability? Because I can tell you, a lot of us, we make decisions based not only on what we think we should do, but a lot of decisions are based on what we think other people think we should do. You somehow were able to do what Jen thought was best, and it worked out really, really well.
Yeah. I mean, where does that come from? I don't know exactly, other than necessity forced that to some degree, right? I mean, had I grown up in a normal household without all of that, who knows where I would have gone to school, right? I'm sure I wouldn't have made those risky decisions if I didn't have to. You know, I didn't get a choice on my first assignment in the Air Force, you know? I was going to a nuclear physics lab, and that was that. And the very first day on that job, I was sent to a meeting and they said, hey, we don't need you to say anything, just take notes. And I went to the meeting and I didn't understand any, I didn't even know what the meeting was about. I didn't know any of the words that they were using. And I actually broke down crying. And I went to my boss and I said, I'm so sorry. I don't know what they were talking about. But you just keep going. And, you know, I remember my mom died when I was in college and she was kind of my tether to sanity in a way. I mean, you can imagine with my relationship with my dad, you know, and my mom was very caring, but she was under the same abusive system. So we were sort of like the prisoners together. So we had a deep bond. So when I lost her, it was really hard. And people said, you know, if I lost my mom, I wouldn't be able to carry on. And I said, you would, because you'd have to. Like, I mean, the choice is unacceptable. And so I think it's that resilience of just being able to say, like, I'm not okay with the alternative here, and I will find my way. And after you've done that enough, right, you start to build the muscle for it. So by the time I was leaving the Air Force at 16 years, and you're exactly right, no one said, what a great idea, leave the Air Force 4 years short of retirement. You know, I mean, no kidding. It's roughly, if you work out the financials, I gave up $1 million in ultimate benefits. It's money, right? I mean, who cares? It's just money. I knew I would be able to take care of myself by that point, right? I'd just done it so many times. And I was fortunate that my husband was my one supporter, right? Who said, I think you should do whatever you want. But it's not like everything worked out always, right? So when I made that decision to get out of the military, it turned out that my husband got reassigned when we weren't expecting it. And so all of a sudden, we had a house to sell. We thought we had gotten past the recession. Guess what? We hadn't. So we couldn't sell our house. We had a renter in another house who lost her job and stopped paying rent. And then we had to move. And we had three house payments and now had half the salary.
Oops.
That sucked. Yeah.
Whoops. But
didn't see that coming. But, you know, we were okay. We were okay. And so I think it's just trusting yourself to work it out and that you will get through those hard times. I always say to my clients, you know, confidence isn't believing necessarily that everything will work out. It's believing that you'll be okay no matter what happens.
Yeah. And if not this, then something better.
Right. I'll find my way there eventually, but I'm just not going to give up.
Jen, talk a little bit about, you know, you shared with us when we talked earlier about marrying a wonderful guy, and he's just been super supportive of all of your efforts. Can you talk a little bit about, in all of your roles, have you experienced some of that controlling piece that you have then started to move away from? Has that triggered your childhood on being controlled? So you see some of your spirit of trusting yourself coming from moving away from that? Or have you pretty much had supportive people, you know, aside from your husband, in all of these roles to help you kind of launch to the next step? Or has it all been you?
I mean, certainly, I always say, like, I feel like my husband saved my life in a way. I mean, he was so emotionally grounding and emotionally mature. And quite frankly, it's why I married him. It's not a very romantic story, I suppose, but we met as instructors at the Air Force Academy. Our offices were kitty corner to each other. And, you know, even though I had a rule that I never date people that I work with, he was the exception. But only after, by the way, I had cleared it with our boss without telling him. Like, I went to our boss to ask if I could date him before I told him I wanted to date him.
Oh, I love it.
I didn't want to tell him I liked him if it wasn't going to be allowed. Anyway, so here we are dating, you know, we're working together and we have an argument at work. And my, you know, sort of emotional capacity at that point in my life was kind of that, well, fine. Okay then, right? And then I do the silent treatment and it's just, not healthy, right? And he came back into the room after that little eruption and he said, you know, that didn't go very well. Can we try that again? And that was it. I was sold. I was like, I am marrying this man. I'm going to learn everything I can from him about emotional maturity and healthy relationships, because I obviously have some work to do. I will say, though, I really don't like being told what to do. So there was a point at which the Air Force grated on me. I just couldn't handle it. It felt stifling, right? I would go to my boss, who was a wonderful, wonderful man. We had a great relationship. He shared my sort of vision for innovation and change. And I would say, hey, what about this idea? And he said, Jen, that's a great idea. We can't do that. You know, and it was just like that over and over again. And I said, I need to find another place where I can pursue these crazy ideas. And government service clearly isn't that place.
I was wondering about that. I have one just a thought in my head. It's sort of like this picture. I can see you and your husband today when you were working together, like, you know, you're in the Air Force Academy sending paper airplanes to each other's offices or something. It's like, so I was like, in the Air Force, so I was like, yeah, it's sort of this romantic little thing. Like, you know, like how else do you flirt? Except anyway, that aside, Jen, I'm sort of intrigued with that whole idea, because I was thinking about that when we talked about you being in this really rigid environment and then where you are today. You know, so that had to be a huge leap for you, and almost like, you know, escaping again, because obviously that's how you've grown up in this pretty controlling environment. You escaped, you made your own way, and then you are where you are today. And, you know, it just, I find that piece really fascinating that, you know, a couple times you made that leap and, you know, it really kind of freed your soul to be who you are at this point in life.
It does. I mean, when I told people in high school that I was going to the academy, I mean, everybody said, you know, you are this free spirit. How in the world are you going to survive at the academy? And, you know, most people didn't know what was happening at home. And so part of it was me always finding ways to express myself within these controlling environments. I think that's a piece of it too. You know, one of the things I love to do at the academy, as a freshman, right? Because as a freshman, there's lots and lots of rules. But they have these things called spirit missions that you can go and kind of be a bit of a prankster. And, I was doing that almost every night. In fact, I was sleeping through all my classes because I was up all night playing pranks on all the upperclassmen. And, you know, but it was a release valve. And so it was, I always feel like I sort of needed that gentle glide path to total freedom. Most people aren't really ready for total freedom, especially when you've had a childhood like mine. And so in some ways, I feel like it also provided me a structured growth model, right? And all of those assignment changes when I was doing jobs every single time. I mean, I'd love to tell you that I, you know, by the end, I got some job for which I would have otherwise been unqualified for in any other organization and said like, oh yeah, I've got this. No, I felt like scared and just unable. Like I'm like, oh, okay, this is the time that it's all going to fall apart. You know, what are you going to do though? Right? Like there it is. And so I think all of that practice was really necessary. You know, I don't think the civilian world would have given me that opportunity. So there were benefits to being in the military too, that allowed me to eventually get to where I am now.
So Jen, talk a little bit more about taking this vision of, you know, your creative side is really coming out in this podcast, that you have this free-spiritedness, that you've been in some kind of constrained lanes, but then you're willing to like veer off and act as if. And so when you went from this human performance and really starting to understand the new nature of work, and then moving forward in thinking about how do we do this work for humanity? So there's this gap between this idea. Talk a little bit about bridging that gap and how you made those moves acting as if to get there?
Yeah, you know, some of it was just that my clients were so inspiring. I mean, the changes that they went through just blew my mind. I mean, so I have one client who came to me. He'd just been laid off his job as a server at Applebee's. But he was clearly really intelligent. And he said, Jen, I just don't know what I'm doing wrong. You know, like I'm not making it. He'd been fired before, you know, I mean, he knew there was a problem, but he didn't know what it was and he didn't know how to solve it. And what he really wanted to do was to be a composer. He had a music degree. And I said, okay, well, you're kind of in a tough spot because your wife's about to have her second baby and, you know, she's not making any money. So like, we need to get you to a place of financial stability. So I need to teach you sales. And sales is really about being a good listener and asking good questions. So that's all we worked on. And he could barely afford to work with me. So we only worked together for 3 months, but it was enough to land him a job in sales, even though we'd never done sales before. And very quickly he became the top salesperson in that company and, you know, made enough so that, you know, first they were able to buy their home and then they did an addition and they turned that into a B&B that his wife was able to quit her job and run that from home with the kids. And then he was being pulled up into management. You know, it was, and I think for me, it was that realization of, look at the talent that's being wasted in some of these jobs, right? And they don't realize, I mean, he knew he had talent, but didn't know how to unlock it. 3 months of talking every week. That was all it took. And how unhappy so many people are. And that's, you know, true on all ends of the income spectrum, right? I know lots of people who make lots of money and really hate their jobs. And so it was that realization of like the whole system's broken, right? The system that we have serves very, very few people. And even the people it serves financially, it doesn't serve them spiritually, often socially, and, you know, that kind of that zest for life, right? And so how do we fix the system? And again, this is where, right, you start to look at pulling all the pieces together. My biochem instructor from college said, oh, I'm not surprised you got into this at all. You know, biochemists are system thinkers. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess we are, you know? And so, you know, I did a 2-year research study, really trying to understand how does this system work? How does it keep producing the same bad outcomes, despite the fact that we all say we don't want them, right? We say we don't want them. We put tons of money into education and other interventions. Why isn't this working? And for me, that was really the tipping point. And that allowed me to sort of say, here's the leverage points in the system. Here's why it keeps doing the things we say we don't want. But you have to understand the system first. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't take the time to do. I'll also say I completely self-funded that work. You know, talking about things that people will tell you are crazy and feels like a total risk. You know, I had shut down my coaching practice, so I was no longer drawing an income. And then I basically, my wonderful husband said, sure, why don't you raid our savings account to do this work for a couple of years? That sounds like a really good idea.
So before we end, what I really want to know is today in the work you do, I mean, you've taken your full spirit and engaged in everything that was what was going to fill, you know, your soul, what it seemed at the time, but what's filling your cup today with the work that you're doing at Work for Humanity? I'm just would love to know. I mean, what is the thing that fills your cup?
Yeah. I mean, what's exciting is that I finally feel ready to move from understanding the problem to doing something about it. So we're about to launch our first pilot. I mean, we're really in the midst of it. We're fundraising now. Getting together the necessary partners and funds that we need to kick it off. But the basic idea is that we're going to launch a competition and we're going to help small businesses get through this crisis moment by tapping the collective intelligence of their team and doing that in a way that not only helps the business grow, but helps them reinvest back in those employees to give them economic and professional mobility. So if we can make that work, I think we have a shot at really making a real transformation.
You know, Jen, when you were talking about this system thinking, it just really resonated with the conversations that Mel and I have had and what we're trying to do with Influential She about helping women understand the system of themselves. That if you want to move forward in the world, these, what we are calling our high leverage practices and our talismanic 10, and as if is one of them, is about, it isn't, you just can't disconnect yourself. And that in the world, we hear about, do these 5 steps and you'll be automatically successful. Like, we don't know if women will be successful or not. That's a tagline. But if you're willing to look at the interconnected system of being a strong woman that's living, understanding herself, doing a good assessment of the landscape that you're living in, not only within your whatever work you're in, but also your family life and your support structures, and then starting to do something about it and taking some skills that, you know, it gets back to this juicy life you're talking about, that there is a systemness to being a strong woman. And it isn't about one or two isolated things. And so I just love this work that you're doing. You've just been incredible to highlight proceeding until apprehended. I mean, you are just, you're the epitome of it. So thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure.
Jen, thank you again from the bottom of our hearts. And it's just a fascinating story and the fascinating what you've been able to achieve and accomplish. And we want to thank all of our listeners today who are tuning in and know that there are, it just gives you some, I think, inspiration to be bold and to think about what's really important for your life and acting as if. And we always like to leave our listeners with a little bit of inspiration and would like to ask you this question if you think about. So if, you know, if you really are living as if, are you living out what you envision, what you want to be? So thanks again, and we hope you tune in next time.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.